Welcome to the Mojo Podcast, and today is a very special episode and something a little different from my usual Mojo conversations. What's new? Well, today I'm joined by not one, but three amazing guests. Intros coming soon. And we're going to focus on a profoundly important topic that they all have immense expertise and experience in. We're talking about building a fairer and more equitable workplace, and specifically how men can find the mojo to better support gender equality. So we're recording this episode a week after International Women's Day in mid-March 2023, very deliberately timed to allow us all to assess what came up last week and use this episode to reflect a little on the themes, the data, and the feelings that we all felt. And the icing on the cake, we're all sitting together in a studio in central London, which I have to say is utterly joyful and creates a magnificent energy. So first to my guests, all three have been previous guests on the Mojo podcast, so their voices may be familiar to you. Firstly, we have Lara Millward. Lara is part of the leadership team at Shine, dedicated to accelerating inclusivity. She is a neuro leadership coach, a mum, a CrossFit fanatic, I think it's fair to say, which is 50-50 men and women, and lives life by the mantra, I move, therefore I think. Welcome, Lara.
Thank you, Richard. Nice to be here.
Daniele Fiandaca is founder of Token Man Consulting, an inclusion and diversity consultancy who specialise in engaging senior leaders and men within inclusion and diversity and inspiring them to become inclusive leaders and agents of change, creating workspaces that are truly inclusive and diverse. Welcome, Daniele.
Thank you.
And Bodhi Aldridge. Bodhi is a guide, teacher, facilitator and best-selling author. He guides men to develop presence, open their hearts and integrate their masculine and feminine energy so they can start playing attention to what matters most. And Bodhi wins the award for coming furthest today, a mere 10,000 miles to join us in London. Hey, Bodhi.
Thanks, Rich. Yeah, it's all about commitment.
Great to have you. Well, absolutely. Well, welcome, everyone. Wonderful to have you. We're also braving a tube strike in London today, so thank you all for doing that. So this is how we're going to roll today. We have a working thesis that most men aren't fully supporting gender equality. Or you might say they don't have the mojo to genuinely support gender equality. And we're going to give this thesis a good test today and see what emerges. I have a few areas that I want to get to, so I'm going to keep us moving forward. Here's what we're going to attempt to cover today. So firstly, where are we right now in terms of gender equality and men's role in supporting women? How do we get here? As this might help us think of ways to get forward faster. And how do we help men and help men help themselves to find the mojo to generally support, to champion, to lean in to gender diversity? So that's our intention, and very much to be a source of inspiration today, a place where you won't get called out or accused. We're going to create a safe space for everyone listening today. The Mojo podcast really believes in the power of positivity, so that's what you can expect today. And just a little note, dear listener. In order to get this episode out to you as quickly as possible, I'm not going to be editing much, if at all, today. So if we stumble, so be it. We're all human, right? And I'll be doing plenty of that. But first, and whatever the episode, I always like to start here. I want to check in with you all to see where your own personal mojo is today out of 10. So Lara, I'm going to come to you first. How's your mojo today, Lara?
My relatedness in my SCARF score, which is the brain's response to social needs, is very high. It's one of my key drivers. So sitting with three incredible brains to learn from discuss with has put me up there at a 9. Richard, delighted to be here.
Wow, a 9, and you've already dropped a model in that we probably want to unpack as well. So thank you for that. There's the neuro leadership piece coming in straight away. Thank you, Lara. Daniele.
I think if you asked me this question at the end of last week, I probably would have said 3. Oh. We're going to talk about some of the data that came out last week, but I think I was quite down actually last week by the time I got to the end of the week. I think if you're talking today, I think sometimes, you know, you have to have that data to really create that focus. And really, I think I'm probably at an 8. I actually feel like for the first time in a long time, I'm just more, my mojo's at an 8, probably for the first time in 2 years.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Okay. Well, we're going to drill into that for sure. So thank you for sharing that. Thank you, Daniele. Bodhi?
I'm at a 7. I would say. It's been a great week. Arrived in London about 5 days ago. Mm. We had a beautiful, beautiful circle of male leaders last night. Mm. And then the tube strike and coming in here. Noticed a little bit of resistance. So, pleased to be here and, excited as well. And pleased to hear where everyone else is at.
Great. Well, thank you all for giving me that little data point in terms of where you're all at and what's behind it. So let's jump in. And as I said, I'd like to start with, so where are we right now? And as I said, deliberately, we're having this conversation a week after International Women's Day, because there's lots of research, there's lots of data that comes out during that time. And Daniele, I'd like to start with you, because I know you're gathering a lot of the data. You're running your own research. Where are we right now in this?
We're not in a good place, is the truth. I mean, we saw data that came out last week that showed that 53% of men in the UK feel we've gone so far with gender equality, they're now being discriminated against. So that's a majority of men. I think just as worryingly, we actually saw 52% of Gen Z and 52% of millennials think the same thing. If you look at the research that we've done, we did a Things People Say. We asked women, you know, what percentage of men do you think are actually active male allies? We got a score of 44%. And actually, in our Masculine to the Workplace research that we published 2 weeks ago, we actually saw that only 31% of people felt the majority of their men were leaning into I&D. So what we're seeing is not enough men leaning in, but at the same time, we're seeing more and more people actually resisting the conversations and actually thinking they're now being discriminated against.
So some pretty stark data in there in terms of where we are. And actually, I think you were saying before, we're actually moving backwards.
We are.
We're not stepping forward.
All the data that I saw from that research last week, from actually King's College did the research, so we're right next door, showed that actually things have got worse since 2019 in nearly every single data point. So what we are seeing is a negative move as opposed to a positive move.
And can you pin that on anything particular, or is it numerous themes?
I'm really interested to hear from Bodhi, but I do think, you know, I don't like to talk about a crisis in masculinity, but I do think that we are coming to a point where men are struggling to know who they are, who they should be, what their roles are. Esther Perel talked about it beautifully. You know, she talks about, you know, the last 50 years, and again, International Women's Day, women through feminism have had that 50 years to look at who they are, what they want to do, what they want to be. Men haven't had that, you know, and what I think what Esther Perel's quote says, I think, beautifully, I use it the whole time, is she talks about, she really worries that, she talks about it's a real opportunity for men to redefine who they are. But she worries that men and women don't have the tools to support that. And it's certainly what I feel. And certainly that, I know a lot of people around who are helping men to gain those tools. You know, I know the work you do actually is helping men reconnect to their feelings, helping men talk openly, helping men understand what journeys they might do. I love, you know, I talk about the masculine and feminine quite a lot, you know, start embracing some of those other traits that often masculinity has judged men in the wrong way. And the other stats, you know, that was research, just to give you an idea, think it's something like, and again, I think it's something like 30% of Gen Z now think that a man taking primary care duties makes them a lesser man.
Wow.
Just to give you some idea of how scary some of those stats are.
Yeah. Well, and we might come into some of the influences circling that particular group right now. Yeah. The name Andrew Tate springs to mind for me, but I'm a bit loath to bring that into the room, but we may get to that. Let's see. Trying to keep it positive. Bodhi, so, what's the state of masculinity? Big question.
Yeah. I think, you know, and Lara and I were talking yesterday that, you know, in some ways we've created this vacuum, this space has been created, and a lot of men are struggling with, you know, we've got the extreme response, you know, and we know in the social media, particularly for younger men, there's a lot of noise out there about what is masculinity from the extremities. And certainly the men I work with, both in the UK, the US and Australia, is that so many don't feel they're part of this toxic masculinity, which isn't a phrase that I particularly like. yet they are lost. They're like, I'm not part of this toxic masculinity. I don't want to lean into some of the extreme conversations, someone you've mentioned earlier. Yet where do I go? Where do I go to really identify myself as a man these days? You know, my masculine and feminine energy. And if anything, I think it's a huge opportunity for all of us. You know, and it's a complex issue. I mean, a lot of what Daniele does is systemic change in organisations. So, you know, and when you look at the systemic work, you know, often what will occur is there'll be parts of the system, yeah, which are being marginalised. Mm. And specifically, we're looking at how potentially men or the masculine is being marginalised. That's a systemic issue as much as an issue for how do we support the men. Mm. So I see it, there's a craving, there's a desire, there's the deep longing in men and in some organisations to support this equality. Mm. Yeah, across both gender and diversity.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Lovely.
And, yeah,
and that's a great jumping off point to bring Lara in, just on organisations recognising that they want to make change, because that's what you and Shine have been doing for many years now. Mm. What are you feeling, hearing from the boardroom in terms of what organisations are saying around? But where are we right now?
Mm. Good question, and thank you, Daniele and Bodhi, because I'm learning a lot from you both, and that will make me a better person in what I do. I think from Shine perspective, the conversations we're having in the space are very much about still getting women to more senior places in organisations, because that's still lacking. So from our point of view, where we are right now is that we're still lacking women in senior roles, and we think that will make companies more human. We believe that when women thrive, men thrive. Companies thrive, and there is still a call for that. But I think we're also seeing that the gender conversation shouldn't just be a conversation of women together in a room talking to women, is that it should be for all genders, and we should be having the conversation together and bringing men in as our allies and champions, but also so that we can all empathize with each other and work better together, creating a better working world. I think to add to your question, Richard, where are we now? The words that came up for me is separated and confused. I think it feels like women are thinking and feeling one way, men are thinking and feeling another way, and actually are coming together and opening these conversations up together is where we need to go. I mean, the UN Secretary General spoke last week about we're 286 years off gender equality, and it's vanishing before our eyes. Yet I hear and understand Daniele's point of view and some of the stats on men. So there is for me, it's an intent, a perception, and a reality, isn't there? The intent is we all want gender equality and we want all genders in the conversation. The perception can be very different from the shoes you stand in. So the perception of men, and I hear Bodhi and Daniele on that, but the perception from a lot of women is I'm still not represented in companies. There's still a big gender pay gap. There's still sexual harassment in, and then the stats on that and the media around that are frightening for women. There's still that going on. And the reality is, as we say, men think it's gone too far, and women think it's not gone far enough. So it feels to me it's time. Where are we now? Time to come together and get better together.
Well, that feels like an area we should explore. That stat, that 281 year stat, is scary. It's almost to me, it's a bit like climate change.
Yes.
You know, it's so vast. It seems, well, I'll just pack up and not do this then. It's just too much. But we know there's too much at stake to ignore. So, how do we start to move? And now, you know, we're not going to sit here as four people and solve everything, but we're going to try and inspire. So how can we start to move the conversation? How can we start to bring that intent that exists, that make it real? Just before we get in, maybe more future focused, are there some success stories? Who's out there? I'm not suggesting naming names if we don't feel comfortable doing it, but are people doing good stuff? Are there reasons to be cheerful? Daniele, you're working with lots of different people. What would you say?
Well, I think it ties into the conversations I've been having with Bodhi as well, in terms of if you create the right environment, men do want to embrace that change. So that's the positiveness. You know, we did a report last year which you can get on the Token Man website, which is men leaning into IND. And what we actually found is 97% of men who have actively leaned in said they are a better lead or human being as a result of that work. That's an amazing stat. Yeah. And I am seeing, working with those men and actually creating some of those safe spaces, how people do want to go on a journey. They do see the benefits, but at the same time, they are struggling. You know, the work, you know, there's a reason why people talk about doing the work. The work is not easy. Mm. You know, if I'm honest with you, I've had two moments in the last 5 years where I've nearly stepped away. Right. And if I didn't have the wonderful cheerleaders that I have, that actually mostly women, I would have stepped away because I just wouldn't, my mental health would have just, I couldn't have done it. I had to step away. So.
And what led to that? Those moments of,
I don't really want to revisit them, but it's actually being challenged by women around stuff. Actually, you know, it's really interesting. Elliot Ray yesterday started posting that he's starting. Elliot is a brilliant, brilliant human being who's doing some great work with fathers. But his profile's now got to a stage where he's actually getting hate mail and he's getting from that. Men. Yeah. And someone asked me, am I getting it? I said, my profile's not high enough. You know, it's kind of like, but the reality is I've never been that worried about what men say, actually. You know, those kind of quips. I do get the quips, you're still doing that women's work. You know, that kind of, minimizing the work that I'm doing. Mm. I don't mind that for men. But, you know, everything I do to help women. So when you get criticized or you get challenged, that can be quite hard. So you need to have that kind of support. And the reality is some of that criticism has been fair. But as you go on a journey, you're never going to get always right. And I don't think people realise that. And there's not enough. I know they're starting to rename cancel culture, aren't they, in terms of, I can't remember what the name, but it's part of that culture. If you get anything wrong, there's no understanding of why you might get that wrong. And actually just wanting to move those people aside. Mm. And so certainly those two moments, I felt like was in that environment where actually I would walk away just because of being challenged for getting it wrong. And, you know, you can't, I've contributed to quite a few books, but one of the books that was the best piece of advice ever. And the advice I had in that book was it's better to be wrong and interesting than right and boring. And I've used that quite a lot, and people have challenged me and said, in the space that I'm in, are you sure you want to use that? It can be taken out of context. Yeah. But actually, I learn so much more by being wrong than I do but from being right.
Yeah. Mm. So you're bringing that positive intent. You are trying. You're bringing all your energy to it, and that matters because there's no energy in it at all.
Yeah.
We're not gonna get anywhere. So Bodhi, you know, you work a lot with energy actually and intention. What's your reflection on kind of we've talked about where we are and but how we got here.
Yeah, and I think also to your question about there are some incredible stories of change, you know, of what is occurring. And again, you know, in this conversation, you know, I'll keep coming back to the systemic influence first, because what we're seeing is, you know, again, you know, what's occurring with the masculine, feminine and the gender is just a symptom of the system. And we know that the great stories out there are when the leadership in the system are embracing this. And, you know, the studies Google did in the last 5 years, the most healthy cultures have psychological safety. And I would add psychological and emotional safety. And that's from the top down. Mm. And so when we're meeting this question at middle management, when we're meeting it in isolation from the full leadership team, it becomes a symptom of what's going on from the leadership. And on that basis, the psychological safety and the emotional safety, what I know is that men are willing to be vulnerable if they feel safe. And that study around culture was broader than this specific conversation. But we know if it's a safe culture, psychologically, emotionally safe, one of the most robust parts of a safe culture is the willingness to give and receive honest feedback. And we know the most dynamic businesses have that as in their DNA. But you've got to feel safe.
Hmm.
Yeah, you've got to feel safe to have a point that's different.
Mm.
Mm-hmm.
And so for me, there are lots of examples of that, yet it starts at the leadership, whatever the gender. Yeah, the leadership need to be willing to create that culture and that environment, and then it'll trickle down.
There is the chicken and the egg, though, isn't there, in that that culture is usually driven by the senior leadership, who are men, who aren't driving that culture because they're not willing to be vulnerable. I mean, I actually had one man said to me in the work that I've been doing, he just said to me, Daniele, you're asking me to be vulnerable at work when I can't be vulnerable with my wife.
Mm-hmm.
And actually a lot of the conversations we're having as men, senior leaders, simple things like people really going into spiral mental health, you know, that pressure of being a breadwinner.
Mm-hmm.
If you ask them, did you ever, you know, pressure that they felt from their spouse, did you ever speak to your spouse and talk about how you were feeling to understand whether actually that was a real pressure or a perceived pressure? None of them ever spoke to their spouses about it. They just took it all on and assumed that without actually having those conversations. And so coming back to your point, Lara, it's about conversations. It's about how do we have more of these conversations together.
Totally agree. And giving each other the language to do that so that we can communicate. So important. And what coming up for me here as you're both speaking is empathy all round, you know, for senior leaders to stand in the shoes of those that work for them. How are they thinking and feeling? How can I put them in reward state and bring them into feeling part of the team, included, psychologically safe? But also what came up for me as you were talking was the difficult nature of behavior change. So if I'm going to stand in the shoes of a senior leader who's male, I'm pretty comfortable. We all know as we get older, we're pretty comfortable in who we are. Staying in your lane is pretty comfortable. Changing is really hard and it's uncomfortable and difficult. So how we create behavior change is a really, really, as I just said, difficult scenario. But we need to find the language and the tools. And I think that's a bit why we're here today, is to create some words, some tools, some practical advice for opening up, cracking open these conversations and becoming better together.
Mm. And it's so interesting. You just talked about staying in your lane. My next post is called Don't Stay in Your Lane.
Really?
No, because actually we've created an environment where actually historically marginalised groups have been asked to stay in their lane.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And actually not to aspire for something different. And actually, whereas men, actually the most comfortable thing they can do is stay in their lane.
Mm.
I actually think we're at that kind of inflection point where leaning in to IND in the short term is more likely to damage your career than benefit it in many organisations.
Right. Mm.
In many organisations, not all the organisations, hopefully not the ones I work with. But that's a real problem because we need to start getting accountability.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so we need to get accountability. So first, people need to start rewarding some of the more inclusive behaviours like vulnerability, empathy, culture, intelligence. But also, we also need to stop rewarding those that aren't doing those behaviours and actually punishing the bad behaviour. Because at the moment, I'll give you an example, and it's really bad, but I ask this question quite a lot, which is, I will say to women that work within organisations, actually most of my clients are women, do you have someone in your organisation that's kind of known as handsy? Every single person will say yes. And I'm like, how does that behaviour still enabled?
Mm-hmm.
And no one should have all know who that person is, but nearly every organisation has examples of that. And the system is enabling those people to still exist. And we've got to change that.
Mm. Yeah. So any examples of where we've seen organisations make some structural systemic change that puts... there is a benefit to you as a man for stepping out of your lane and getting involved in gender equality. Are we there yet? Is anyone doing that?
I think related to that question, what Lara touched on, if you look at behavioural change, fundamentally our behaviour is driven by what we value. And normally that's unconscious. Yeah, and all of us have done lots of values work, you know, on ourselves and organisationally. So if you think about the change we're looking for, particularly from senior men, until there's a value proposition, it's very hard to get the change.
Mm.
And what we know, rightly or wrongly, is normally that's a commercial outcome.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, given whatever KPIs they're on, whatever the shareholders expect. And so for me, the interesting moving forward is, how can we quantify the commercial opportunity of everything we're talking about? We know it intuitively, and there is lots of evidence, yet, you know, we're missing 50% of the energetic possibility in organizations. You know, the way the masculine and feminine operate in both genders is such a big part of how we can accelerate and grow organizations that will improve, yep, profit, will improve relationship with stakeholders, all of those sorts of things. So I think the future is, you know, and part of our conversation with senior leaders is to really present, you know, the commercial as well as the cultural benefits of what we're talking about.
If what comes to mind for me is almost what gets measured gets managed.
Yes. Right?
And I know there are numerous charters that organisations have signed up to, and what I'm not sure of is how real what they are. What's the consequence of not hitting a number that you've signed up to? Mm. How could we make it more consequential? What needs to happen is, I mean, I guess we're talking about from a legislation point of view, but
I think just to jump in again, and is the easy place at the moment is talent recruitment and retention. Like, that's a measurable. And it's, you know, like working with the CEO Institute in Canada, you know, the three biggest issues that the CEOs keep them awake at night. Number two is talent retention, attraction and retention. And we know that organisations that don't embrace this, the work Danielle's doing, the work Lara's doing, are losing good talent, and they're not attracting good talent. And this is a real issue. This is keeping CEOs up at night. And so there's ways to measure that as far as the cost of losing good talent, you know, the cost of having to recruit talent or not recruit talent. So just as one entry point to your question, Rich,
yeah,
I think that's an area... Yeah, that absolutely links to this conversation.
Yeah.
You know, if you want to attract and retain the best talent, men and women, masculine and feminine, you've got to be willing to look at
because
it.
Because I think I'm going to come to Lara. Yeah. There is a point, and I'm going to generalize here, but when you can recruit 50-50, let's say male, female, at a graduate level, and people come up through the level and come up, there's a point, isn't there, when women start to leave and the men stay. Do you see that?
Yeah, we see that a lot of the time at Shine, and we call that the endless juggle, where we get to a point in a mid-senior career with women when they come to the point often when they want to get married, have children, and they're trying to juggle that part of their life. I want to stay in the organization and be senior. I'm good at my job. I am talent that's been retained thus far, but I don't see women above me that are role models for me that I can copy, and I don't see that I fit. But I'm also so stretched with childcare and the other things that come in with parents. So, you know, talking about actions, what can we do? You know, let's really take parental leave, men and women. Let's share that. Let's allow men to do that if we're coming into how we can do that, you know. And that's also allowing men. My husband always said to me, I couldn't leave work. I missed out on the school shows and the missed. But I, what would have happened in my career if I'd have said at 5 o'clock, I'm going? You know, for him, he felt like it was a no-go area. But inside of him was someone that did want to champion women, that did want to champion racial difference and all those kind of things, but he felt he couldn't. So if we can shift that, working with a bank at the moment, and within this team, this sort of mid-senior level, three women and two guys I was talking to, one of the guys did take parental leave, age 32, for 6 months. Everyone in his team in the bank were like, oh, he's never going to come back. He's going to lose his clients. Everyone swoops in and take over. He came back. No change. His career is fine. The girls in the team all said to me, that's fantastic. He's role modeled something that I didn't think I could do. Mm-hmm. And that's changed the dynamic in the team for the better. So in that sense, for me, there's a lot of hope in, you know, I'm 52 now, in the 30-somethings I'm talking to, the late 20-somethings, that they are being the change they seek and leading the way. So I'm very hopeful for new leadership and new ways of thinking, and I see it in my children. They're already less gendered in their roles. They're much more gender fluid. You know, we talked about staying in our lane. I know I'm in my lane from my lived experiences. I've got to learn about pronouns. I've got to learn about all sorts of things, and I'm open to that, and I'm open to learning about how men are thinking and feeling. So that we can all collaborate, be more authentic, and I'm going to say it again, get better.
Yeah.
Mm. Just wanted to build. So that we've got, I don't know if you've ever seen, there's a video done by the Mayor of London where they did an experiment with people going up the escalator. Some only men could go up, so women had to walk upstairs.
Have you seen that?
Watch that. And I use it a lot in the work I do. And I've been showing it for about 6 months, a year. And in the workshop last month, for the first time, someone showed me something I wasn't really appreciate. And she just made the point. She said, basically all the women do walk up the stairs. It's just showing that it's systemic. You know, they accept that they walk up the stairs. The men don't go and help the women. You know, there's that real kind of divide. Mm. She just said, and when you get to the top of the stairs, you're bloody knackered. And we've seen with Jacinda, and we've seen with Nicola Sturgeon, we've seen two women, very senior positions, are just bloody knackered because of the systemic issues they have to continue dealing with, even when they're in that senior leadership position. So I think it's so important that we do start understanding those issues and the impact it actually has on women, because it must be so tiring.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. Mm. So let's shift to our sort of that sort of third part of this, and Laura, you kind of set this up in that generations coming through. You talked about your son; they are simply the way they are brought up and raised. They are less gendered. Mm-hmm. It just makes complete sense for to have equality and fairness. Mm. And anything else would just seem very countercultural. Mm. However, we have got this gap. Mm-hmm. What can we start to do now to start to help men find that mojo to really lean in? And we've talked about some of that. There are benefits. I'm not sure how commonly they're known, but what can we do?
I think the first thing we need to do is, I've had to give myself the same advice. I would say the same advice to all the work that I do across IND. And let's be really clear, the work that I do is about creating more inclusive for everyone. So, you know, it's not just women and understanding women. It's looking at all historically marginalised groups. But the first thing we always talk about is listening. Listen. Mm. And I think the data that came out last week is telling us that we need to, for the next 6 months, 12 months, we need to listen to those men. We need to listen to why they're thinking as they're thinking. Because only then can we understand how the messaging... you know, I think we talked about it before. You said, well, people aren't listening to women either. But the airtime is so much so different. There's very little airtime for men's issues or men's stresses. And the reality, we're all human beings and we all have stresses. We all have challenges, and everyone deserves to be listened to. So I think for me, the first thing we need to do is listen so that we can understand what support we can give those men and why they're feeling that, how they're feeling.
And Daniele, to get quite practical on it, how does that happen? Is that in your workplace? Is it in a community, men's circles? Where does that listening happen?
I think all of those things. In fact, we do a masculinity at the workplace study every year. I had a conversation yesterday. I've got to speak to Rock. I'm thinking of moving it forward. You know, we wait because I think the moment is now. We really need to understand and listen to that thing and so that we can start actually providing the support. I think where the industry has probably got it wrong, and I include myself within this, is we started at recruit allies. You can't recruit anyone unless you listen to people first. And I started Token, you know, if you look at masculinity, the word, we started it 5 years ago because I realized I wasn't looking at the issues that men were facing. So that's when I started looking at vulnerability. I go to a lot, you know, I spend a lot of time understanding how we can take men through that journey and provide them with the support first. Because I think we're going to come to the mojo question, but we have to allow men to get their mojo back first and be confident in the space before we can even expect them to be allies. Or because, you know, they just don't have the confidence, they don't have the tools. Yeah. So when someone says something sexist in the room, they know, they just feel so, they just don't know what to do. And so having that, you know, I'll give you, it's an example, but, you know, I've been doing this work for 5 years. It's taken 6 years longer. It's taken me that, you know, I'm an Arsenal fan, so I'm very happy at the moment. I may that keep on going. But there's, for anyone that knows Arsenal, there is a song, you know, Spurs are our most hated rivals. And there is a song which uses a very derogative word for the Jewish community. Yeah, which is horrendous. Okay, It's only in the last 2 months I've now had the confidence. If anyone says it around me, I will step in and call them out. Because now I've got the tools. I've now got the confidence. I've now got the mojo. I actually can't not do it. The one thing I would do is if it felt unsafe, but I feel so safe in the stadium, I wouldn't do it. But actually, that's where we talk about systems, right? Because we've now created systems where we know, you know, we just saw literally Ivan Toney, some racism that he's done on social media, he's just got punished for the first time.
Yeah.
Those kind of checks and balances are really important in the system, because what it does, it gives you confidence to act without actually having reprisals, without feeling unsafe. And so for me, and it's really interesting because I get to learn, because I've done it now twice in the last, once you start, you don't stop. And I've had such different reactions for men. I've had one man going, but everyone sings it. And I go, doesn't make it right. He then spent the next 75 minutes of the match, he was sitting behind me, apologising. Okay, so another man, again outside at half time, just lied to me and said he didn't say it. Okay, and so there's one guy, so I've got them thinking, but this one guy clearly, for me, is lying because he's scared I might report them, which might mean they get a stadium ban. As opposed to really thinking about what they're saying. Whereas the other guy who spent the whole time apologising, I think had the opportunity to think about it. So, you know, just seeing those reactions means that I'm learning more about my language, how I might be able to use it, and just gives me confidence to do it more and better.
I was going to say, and there's the key. So the listening, but what sits behind it is the confidence that I've got the tools, and also what you're talking about, the system's going to back me up. Because there's something about confidence. You can have it all, but if you don't believe that the system, the organisation is going to back you up with it, the confidence sort of fizzles away, I think. Bodhi, you know, for you, you're working with lots of men, asking lots of questions about themselves. What's your take on, you know, how we can help men here?
Yeah, I think to Daniele's point, like, if there is a vacuum and men are looking for a place to be heard and a place for empathy, to Lara's point, and perhaps some tools on what is it to be a man in business, what is it to be a leader as you navigate all of the conversations around diversity, around gender. You know, and I believe there is, and the work we're all doing, I think, shows it. I think we know there's a need. Daniele's got the evidence. And we know there are tools, you know, to support that. And so essentially, you know, and a big part of what we're all doing is, yeah, how do we do this? Whether it's both genders in the room together, yeah, so that we can really have empathy for each other.
All genders now.
all genders. Yeah, thank you. And, you know, to Daniele's point, a lot of the men don't feel heard. We need a safe space with the women in there, you know, for them to feel heard, to feel what it's like for them. And they also need to realise that for a lot of women, this has been their experience for a couple of hundred years. Not that they dismiss that, but to realise that, you know, the barriers to entry, all of the bias that Daniele works with, the conscious and unconscious bias. So I guess it's a long answer, Rich, too. I am excited about the possibility and where we're at with really being able to support the men. Yeah, and to support this conversation. And I think there, more and more we're seeing the need. We know that, you know, the work Daniele's doing, the work we're all doing, is there's tools out there.
Totally agree, Bodhi. Yeah. And to build on that, I think action-wise that we're talking about is accountability and key behavioural indicators, not just key performance. I think making accountable for empathetic and inclusive behaviours from senior leaders, and we do need the senior leaders to lead the way. It feels like me there's an evolution that we need in corporate culture, and the evolution to relabeling what we always called soft skills. Right? Actually, how a team are together is what makes the magic in the team. You know, Google looked for the perfect team. They looked at all the data, all the emails on Project Aristotle, and what came up, well, they couldn't nail it with the data. It was how they were together, how they made each other feel. Because as humans, that's important. So how we feel at work is massive. So for me, there's a relabeling of these skills. There's an investment in corporations in the key behaviors we want to back and see in our companies to be inclusive of all genders, of all races, of all religions. And, you know, we talked about what could some of the tools be at Shine. We looked at how can we help our champions of change, as we call the men that we work with. You know, is there a tool that you say, agree it, call it, back it? Really simple. Power of three, a great trickle on. Everyone in the team is agreed on their behaviors, and they know that they can call it out when it happens, but that someone in the room, the behavior is agreed in that team, that I'm going to back you up, that you don't have to call it on your own. You're not going to be in threat state on your own or in trouble on your own, just like your football example. You know, someone else is going to back it because it's an agreed behavior. And only if we agree that behavior can it become a habit, and then we see change. So we need habit to change. And also for me, there's this big piece that you touched on, Bodhi, about reward. What is the reward for the organization if we're inclusive? We've seen the reports. McKinsey say that there'll be $12 trillion more in the economy if we narrow the gender pay gap. You know, so maybe we know that the why is there. It's now, as I said in the team, it's the how. How do we get there together? How do we create change in teams? How do we shift behaviors? How do we label that reward and encourage people to move towards it?
And it's really interesting because I've just launched, you know, I've just been building, you know, I only launched Soak Man Consulting last year. I've just, you know, earlier this year, we launched a group coaching product. Because actually, I think what you're talking about is relational. Mm. I think at the moment what we're doing too much of is kind of getting people to individually do training, mm-hmm. pick it up as they want to do it, whereas actually what we need to do is get teams together. So I love what you're talking about. And also, you know, what's really interesting for me, I do a lot of work, and I actually most of my projects now I do collaboration. So for me, it's so interesting. But, you know, we talk about we're not having the conversation together, but you've already, so many things you've said I've just been thinking about or done. It's funny. The Masculine to the Workplace report. I did a last read, and the final change I made, the only change I made to the thing, was actually relabeling soft skills. Because I saw it in the report, and I went, how did I not miss that? And I've just looked it up online, and actually I saw this really nice, someone has relabeled it power skills. Okay. So now I only call it power skills. And people go, what are power skills? And you talk about those skills that they so all of a sudden that language is really important.
That's language that the masculine is going to be attracted to.
It right, is 100%.
I want to step into that. How am I power skills today? So on that's a nice framing for we're going to end shortly. But while I've got you all here, one more question. It's quite a coaching question actually, and I want to project. I want you all to project forward in as a positive mindset as you can. So here we are. It is now March 2024. We meet here in this lovely studio again, the four of us. And I ask you, what's different now? What's different? How are men now? Have they found the mojo? Where are we at? Bodhi, kick us off with that.
I think that the four of us have each supported an organization and individuals to transform into the space of really being able to, you know, be present, be the men, the women, yeah, whatever gender. And I think if each of us can come back in a year with those incredible case studies of change, I think that would be amazing. And I think that's absolutely possible.
Mm. Right. So the work has started. That's what you'll be talking about. Okay. Daniele.
I just want more men engaged with IND, but I think that has to be at three different levels. The first level is support. So what we need to do is really dial up the amount of conversations we're having around where men are struggling and understanding what support they need. I think the second one then is engage and inspire. And that really for me comes about, okay, I'm now interacting because I want to be a more inclusive leader. So, and that benefits me actually more than anything else. So I'm going to learn how to be more vulnerable and learn to be more empathetic and more culture intelligence. And then the third area is recruit. So recruit is recruiting more people to be better allies and be agents of change. And I think we have to measure those three things at the moment, I think everything's been in the recruit without doing the first two. And I think I want to be able to see far more in the first two. And, you know, I've just launched a panel series, and my concern, I have some amazing speakers, it's completely free. My concern is we're just not going to get many people there. And so for me, I need to see those men leaning in and going, do you know what? There's a panel on male mental health. I should really listen to that and understand. There's a panel on being a father in the workplace. I'm a father in the workplace. What can I learn from that? And so for me, that's as much of a measure, because I don't think we can do it all in 12 months. You know, we're not going to recruit all of these better allies. And I think there's still, with the data is telling us, there's a lot of work for us to do to say, okay, let's get the groundwork right. Let's start understanding how we can support those men better. Because I know from experience, and experience you've done as well, Bodhi, is if we do support those men, have them feel they're listened to, they do become better human beings. Yeah, and that allows them to do a lot of the work that I know, Laura, you're doing, you know, and the challenges you've got. But it allows them to actually start thinking about, one, redefining success. What does success look like? Mm. Yeah, and I just very quickly, I just want, the one thing I would say about fatherhood is the conversation I don't think is happening enough is, okay, no, we all know this. No one on their deathbed says, I wish I'd worked more. Okay?
Absolutely.
But you hear a lot of people saying, I wish I'd spent more time with my children.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
I can tell you now, no one is talking about the negative impact of men not spending time with their children the first six to 9 months.
Mm.
And those men who do spend that time will talk about, and that we had a Fathers in the Workplace conference, someone talked about how, because of his circumstances, he spent 6 months with his second child, but not his first. His relationship with his second child is completely different to his first child.
Yeah,
mm.
Yeah, and he told us, I'll never say who it is, because he doesn't want it spoken verbally, because it will never change. In his view, he'll always be closest to his second child. Mm. We need to be talking about those stories.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Because
yeah.
as a man, if you think work is more important than that relationship with your child, then there's something wrong.
Yeah, yeah. And let's, you know, generational shifts are gonna move that, but as you say, men need to see other men doing this and seizing this and role modeling.
You say I don't think we can rely on the generational shifts as much, because we know, you know, I don't like to say his name, but we know the influence of someone like Andrew Tate has had, and his definition of success is really quite clear. And actually what we need to be doing is redefining what success looks like. Okay. And actually I think there's a new generation that coming through that still think that success is not what we know at our age really is success, because I've never had a flash car. I've never wanted a flash car.
Well, I'm going to just I know this is an amazing debate is that the new generation's coming through and what resources they have and who can they reach out to. I think it's maybe probably another podcast, but thank you for bringing that in.
Yes.
And just Lara, for you, in terms of your...
In a year's time.
Your wish, yeah.
In a year's time, I would like to be a better leader, a better coach, a better mother of a son by listening to you wonderful men today. I would like the four of us to have made a bigger impact on the world by cracking open these conversations and starting to make the change that we seek. And the third thing I think is, on International Women's Day next year, I don't want to be speaking to a room of women. I want men in the room.
Fabulous. Mm. Fabulous. Mm. Well, look, I want to thank all of you for coming in today with your expertise, your energy, your stories. And I'm hoping for everyone listening that, you know, even that last question, where do you want to be in a year's time?
Yeah.
And what action are you going to take? You know, and I hope this short conversation has provided some inspiration, giving you that I'm going to take some positive intent forward and make a change. It can be small. It can be huge. You know, one thing, you could share this episode with someone who really needs to hear this story, this message. Mm. So please do that. So thank you for listening. Thank you to my guests again. You've been listening to the Mojo Podcast, and I hope your mojo continues to flow.